Cybersecurity, there's a ton of content out there, and if you don't know where to start, it can be overwhelming, even paralyzing. So let's fix that. Welcome to Simply Cyber, a community of tens of thousands of aspiring and active cybersecurity professionals focused on networking, knowledge sharing, and professional development. I'm Dr. Gerald Osher, Chief Content Creator at Simply Cyber, inviting you to get the answers to your cybersecurity problems with hundreds of cybersecurity videos answering your frequently asked questions, interviewing industry experts, and live streaming daily cyber threat briefings hosted by me. Now get the stories and insights you won't find anywhere else. Hit subscribe now and dig into all the fresh content on the channel and in the community. Nothing should stop you from launching and leveling up your cybersecurity career today. All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to the studio. This is Thursday, April 18th, 2024, episode number 602 or 3. Again, I can't see it anymore because we have gone that far into the matrix with this. So let's go 603 of Simply Cyber's Daily Cyber Threat Brief Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Gerald Osher, and over the next 45 minutes, me, you, LaGrotte, DJ Manny, Thomas Marquette, Triple D, Divine Dream Divine, Tom Bishop from the Boot, Marcus Kyler of the Yeet Crew, Carol, Alpha Sierra, Senfulus. Guys, it feels so good to be back in the studio with full articulation of all the AV stuff. Shout out to the mods. Hashtag mod love in chat if you're a squad member. The mods always keeping me crispy.
That pants is so hot.
The studio
right now
is so hot right now. Guys, over the next 45 minutes or so, we are all going to be shredding the top cybersecurity news stories of the day, and I'll be giving my expert opinion and analysis on each of those stories, on what it means as a practitioner. So how can you use this intel to drive cyber risk reduction for your business stakeholders? And hold up, we're not done yet. The value train just keeps moving. We are going to be providing anyone looking to break into the industry with valuable knowledge. You're going to get terminology, concepts. You're going to stay current. And by the way, spoiler alert, any single job interview you go to in cybersecurity, they're literally going to say, so what do you do to stay current on industry? It's that critical and that required for the role, regardless of what role you do in the industry. This right here, the Daily Cyber Threat Brief, there's a reason we say daily and show up every day, because this is the answer. This is how me and 500 other people every morning and 1,500 more on replay get their daily fix. You feel me? So grab your coffee, settle in. It's going to be a hot, spicy one today. Believe that. What's up, Tony Parrish, with your four-month squad membership? Looking good. All right, guys. Now, I don't prep or research any of these stories, so feel me. Whoa, Pamela. Pamela Heggie's in the house. What's up, Pamela? Good to see you. It's been a minute. Everybody, ladies and gentlemen, Pamela. So, hey guys, listen, I don't prepare or research for any of the stories because I want this to be as authentic and genuine as possible, as if me and you showed up at the water cooler to grab a cup of coffee at work this morning and like just going over the news that we heard on the car ride in back when we used to have to commute. Some people still commute, but anyways, I do want to say shout out and thanks to the stream sponsors before we get into it. I do want to start with Barricade Cyber Solutions. Guys, many of you know Barricade Cyber. They've been a longtime sponsor, but let's give them some love. Barricade Cyber Solutions is dedicated to helping businesses recover from cyber attacks and recover from the damage done. Cyber attacks can cause massive issues for businesses and send dedicated, hardworking business owners into turmoil. But guess what, y'all? You know who knows how to yeet threat actors? Out the environment, Barricade Cyber Solutions. They straight crush it. Eric Taylor, Casually Joseph, check them out at barricadecyber.com. Get your business back on track and basically put the digital fires out when you get compromised by threat actors. Believe me, it feels absolutely violating when a threat actor gets up in your business. Eric Taylor, he ain't got time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that, especially Eric Taylor when he stomps a mud hole in the butts. All right. Also want to say shout out and love. Bear with me, guys. I'm telling you, I'm digging delete me, okay? Let me give you this ad roll, but dude, I'm telling you, it's showing up more and more. I'm really loving it, okay? So check it out. Guys, if you didn't know, I am a public person. I'm loud, I'm screaming in the mic. I go live every day, and I'm a public person who has hot takes, right? Little spicy, little speculative hot takes. I'm aware of safety and security, though. I am a cyber professional, not an idiot, right? So it's very easy to find my personal information online, which totally sucks. And all this data is hanging out on the internet, and it can have real life consequences because there's trolls out there. There's really just bad people that want to do bad things sometimes. And I recently found a solution. This is a service called Delete Me. Let me show you guys on stream really quickly. Delete Me is a subscription service that removes your personal information literally from the largest people search databases, the ones that other bad people would be using on the web, and in the process helps prevent really good things to prevent, like ID theft, doxing, phishing scams, etc. You get a personalized privacy report just for you, showing what information was found, where they found it, what was removed. It's awesome. And the cool thing is that they do all the hard work. It's like, I don't have time for a lot of stuff, which totally is unfortunate. They literally outsource the whole thing. It's sick. What's up, Pamela Squad, man? I love it. So guys, take control of your data. Keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me now at the special discount for Simply Cyber listeners like all of you. Get 20% off Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/simplycyber and use the promo code SimplyCyber at checkout. The only way to get the 20% off is to go join deleteme.com/simplycyber and enter the code SimplyCyber at checkout. That's joindeleteme.com/simplycyber. I do want to tell you guys just on a personal thing, I like this Delete Me service so much that I'm literally signing my entire family up for it. And I was talking to my in-laws and stuff. It's that like turnkey a solution. I really love it. All right, guys, every single episode of the Daily Cyber Threat Brief is worth half a CPE. So be sure to say what's up in chat. Hashtag Team SC. Grab a screen cap of it, file it away. At the end of the year, when you got to do CPEs, just count them up, divide by two. You're off and running. It is a Thursday. It's the final day that I have to teach at the Citadel for the spring semester. Whoop, whoop. So we will be joined by DJ Butt. I almost say DJ Butt. DJ B-Sec for jawjacking, hopefully later on in the show. So stay tuned for that. It is Thursday. What's your meme Thursday? Super pumped for that. If today is your first episode and you're seeing this train just running down the tracks with networking and people and awesome, let me tell you, call yourself out. Hashtag first timer in chat, please. Hashtag first timer in chat. Why? Because we want you to feel super included, super comfortable, and feel open to engaging with the community. So seriously, hashtag first timer in chat. We have a special sound effect and a special emote for you. We love welcoming our first timers. And if you're a regular, just like me, hashtag Team SC in chat, guys. We got a great show for you. I'm super pumped for it all. So let's do this. I feel like I missed something, but that's okay. No, we're good. All right. Do me a favor. You know the routine, y'all. Sit back. Relax. Yes, Matt McDaniel is a long-timer for sure. Anyone with that blue badge is a long-timer. If we get a first-timer, say what's up. Let's get the train going, guys. Do me a favor. Sit back. Relax. Let's let the cool sounds of the hot news wash over us in an awesome wave. I will see you in the mid-roll. But first, I want to say what's up to Bama Photos. Bama Photos, welcome to the party, pal.
Welcome to the party, pal.
See what I mean? Bama Photos stepped into the light and let us welcome them. Oh, we got another one. Danny Lugo Felix coming into the light.
Welcome to the party, pal.
Welcome to the party, pal. Great to have you, Danny Lugo Felix. Love it. I hope you guys have a great, great first episode. First timer in chat. JB, thanks for being here live.
Welcome to the party, pal.
We are ready to rock. Okay, guys, sit back, relax, and let's just chill. Let's go. Actually, who's chilling? Let's let this hot takes train express out the gate. Let's go.
From the CISO series, it's cybersecurity headlines.
Also, we have
these
a bonus
are the cybersecurity
story.
Headlines for Thursday, April 18th, 2024. I'm Rich Straffolino. Sandworm linked group tied to attack on water utilities. In 2024, the threat group Cyber Army of Russia has claimed credit for attacks on several water utility systems in the U.S., France, and Poland.
Hector.
A new report from Mandiant claims this group is linked to the threat group Sandworm, a suspected part of Russia's GRU military intelligence agency. It's unclear if Cyber Army of Russia operates as just another persona of Sandworm or as an independent entity. Analysts note that Sandworm previously has never hit U.S. networks with disruptive cyber attacks. This also comes at a time when Sandworm itself has changed tactics, moving from opportunistic disruptions to more coordinated attacks with Russia's war in Ukraine.
All right, couple things here. One, dude, so many first-timers today. I don't know if you guys are coming from the SE Hymns talk that I gave yesterday and just trickling in here. However you found us,
welcome to the party, pal.
I see Chi Yu, Hector Jimenez, Nick DeSantiago, Haircut Fish, whoever's watching with you, Dan Reardon. I'd name some names. I don't know if Pearl's there, but welcome to the party, pal. Absolutely cool. All right, so check this out. APT 44. Now, 44, Cyber Hamburger coming in hot with the super chat.
Did we just become best friends?
Yep.
After 500 apps this year, I landed a new role as a tier 3 SOC engineer. The secret sauce and networking. Was referred Friday night, 3 rounds of interviews, and on the offer in 3 days of networking. This is the way. 100%. So, lot to unpack here. Yep. One, Cyber Hamburglar just proved that spam applying to jobs won't work normally, and networking is the side door fast track. But most importantly, my favorite sound effect on the soundboard. Here we go.
I came in like a wreck.
Yes, Cyber Hamburglar wrecking into industry with a tier 3 sock job. Way to go. Super pumped. And thanks for the super chat, Cyber Hamburglar. Okay, guys, APT 44. Now, when we talk about Sandworm, I can't remember if they're actually always called APT 44 or if they're given APT 44 a new, like a new designation and also saying it's potentially Sandworm. Now, just to back up for a hot minute, Sandworm is essentially Russia's, you know, A team, their Premier League team, whatever you want to call it, major leagues. They are a legitimate top tier threat actor. Now, the way that Russia breaks up their kind of capabilities, they have one capability. I get Cozy Bear and Fuzzy Bear confused, but one of them is around misinformation, disinformation. And the other one is around like elite level hacking, right? So breaking into stuff. And sometimes they pair together. Famously in the 2006 US elections, I'll say allegedly, I think it's been proven at this point, but allegedly Sandworm broke into the DNC, the Democratic National Convention, high ranking people's systems, and then gave that access to the disinformation, misinformation crew for them to do whatever they want with it. So sometimes they pair together. But the thing is, if APT 44 wants to get you, there's a high probability they're going to get you. Now, it's also worth noting, they typically aren't going after like my Aunt Dorothea's PayPal account. Like this is a precision strike weapon. This comes from like Stark Labs, right? You're not spending that to mug somebody on the subway. So most of us don't have to worry so much. Now, what they're saying is that they're beginning to understand that Sandworm has been involved with the recent attacks on critical infrastructure on the water side. Now, Justin Gold, who's our Simply Cyber hashtag Team SC resident critical infrastructure in the water department expert, aka JMod. So give JMod some love, y'all. He is our resident expert. So, you know, let him chime in on this. But APT 44 has switched tactics and started going after this. Now, here's my thought about this. There's two things interesting to me. One, they said that the techniques have kind of changed a little bit. Guys, you've got to remember, okay, Sandworm is think of Sandworm as like Delta Force or Navy SEALs, right? Like if you're part of the, you know, SEAL Team 6, right? The ones who took out Bin Laden. Like that SEAL team, the humans that made up that SEAL team, they've probably rotated out, right? So there's probably still SEAL Team 6, but they have different people. Sandworm is probably still Sandworm, but you have to imagine that the operators have rotated out, right? You're not going to be like, 30 years Sandworm, like you're all gray, right? No, some people probably stick behind. Maybe they go up to management, classic kind of business or architecture. But for their TTPs to change, if I had to guess, it's because the human operators behind it have changed. Now, they've always been doing kind of espionage, right? That's you know, very sophisticated, very elegant, very quiet type of tax. Now they're going after this water critical infrastructure. If I had to guess, it might be, okay, speculative hot take. I don't have any information on this being true or not. But if I had to guess, look at BRICS, right? Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, that faction. China is a top tier, you know, APT 41 threat actor as far as like espionage goes. China and Russia, you know, like they have their differences, but they also kind of collaborate quite a bit. I could see some type of, you know, joint effort, like, oh, you know, I hate to say it this way, but like, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. So maybe they're collaborating somewhat on this. Now, the report comes from Mandiant. Mandiant is absolutely a legit super organization as far as threat intelligence goes. Mandiant is the incident response firm that gets called in for like Fortune 500, definitely like Fortune 50, U.S. federal agency type stuff. So they have a crap ton of telemetry and intel to make these type of, you know, basically threat intel postings, right? The confidence level in their threat intelligence is good. Two things I would say for practitioners. Ooh, look at this infographic. Oh, hold on one second. Six phases of disruptive operations during the Ukrainian war. Hey. I do have a problem with infographics. Like, it's like an unhealthy fascination. So looks like they're taking on all sorts of stuff and disrupting election campaigns in different places, including... Well, I can't see if it's actually disrupting elections. So anyways, the TLDR for practitioners, if I had to not guess, but here's what I would tell you as a practitioner. One, if you're protecting a Fortune 500 company or a U.S. federal agency, this is relevant to you. Anything else, it's probably less relevant unless you're like, you know, a citizen of a Western philosophy, Western democratic kind of society, then you might take interest in this. If you are new to industry, if you're trying to like figure out what's going on and break in, Sandworm and this particular story in current state of Sandworm is an excellent case study. You should go to MITRE ATT&CK, look up Sandworm, look into it. Andy Greenberg actually has a book on Sandworm. Hold on one second, let me pull it up. I haven't read this one, but I've read Andy Samberg's works before. This book is highly coveted and highly like well touted by the community. It's on my reading list. You can go learn more about it. But just as a practitioner, I would say knowing about, if today's the first day you heard about Sandworm or APT 44, you got a little bit of homework to do. This is a great one to familiarize yourself with because all practitioners know about it. And it's scary, but at the same time, you know, we have, you know, the NSA and stuff like that, which I'm sure those, you know, other countries call threat actors. So let's go.
GPT-4 reads security advisories. Researchers at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign published a paper showing that OpenAI's GPT-4 LLM can exploit vulnerabilities in real-world systems after ingesting a CVE advisory. The researchers used 15 one-day vulnerabilities, half categorized as either high or critical, spanning website vulnerabilities, container vulnerabilities, and vulnerable Python packages. GPT-4 exploited 13 of them. No other LLMs tested successfully exploited any of them. The researchers found, without the CVE descriptions, GPT-4 only exploited one vulnerability. The researchers estimate the time to train and execute the vulnerabilities cost roughly $8.80 per exploit.
So when they say $8.80 or whatever it was, that's probably, if I had to guess, compute cycles. So this is part of the challenge. Oh, hold on.
Shall we play a game?
All right. So this is part of the concern, if you will, the coming wave. If you've read Mustafa Suleiman's book, The Coming Wave, which is phenomenal. I'm reading it right now, and I absolutely recommend it. If you give the capability for individuals in their home to train, you know, good LLMs, then you can, there won't be guardrails on them, because literally OpenAI and Microsoft and Google are removing dangerous material from the training corpus before training the LLMs. In this instance, they're saying with OpenAI's ChatGPT-4, I guess you can pass it a security advisory and they can make an exploit for it. This is not good, right? This is devastating. We as practitioners are already struggling with vulnerability management and keeping ahead of the curve. Actually, wait for the bonus story today, because this is actually quite germane and quite relevant. Yeah, flatten now the coming wave here. Let me just show you guys. This book right here, you'll see, I bought it a couple weeks ago, right? Bought it on paperback March 22nd. This book right here, The Coming Wave, by Mustafa Suleiman. It's phenomenal. I cannot, it's a very sobering read, so get ready for that. But it's, you know what, knowledge is power. And you know what, I know some things can be difficult and hard conversations, right? Talking about end of life arrangements with an elderly one, it's a very difficult conversation. They don't want to have it. This is a very difficult topic to cover in the book. Very sobering, but very pragmatic and very well thought out arguments. So definitely check that out. All right. We are in a little bit of trouble, guys, because if you can, you know, the only thing we can hope here is that you can use OpenAI to find vulnerabilities and patch them faster, right? Now, I will say this. When you do a security advisory, a lot of times security advisories will point out, you know, oh, it's a you know, use after free bug, or it's a buffer overflow bug. The security advisory from MITRE or from NIST isn't going to say, you know, like here, like in memory, like access this function and then push this kind of payload to it. And here's what the shell script looks like. Like security advisories tell you enough to get your bearings, but security advisories don't spell out a playbook typically on how to exploit a vulnerability. So I think, again, this is academic research. This title is very spicy.
Spicy!
Right? But I bet you, if I had time, I would do this live on stream right now. If you look at the 15 security advisories that they selected, I would be curious if they were above and beyond with level of detail on what information was included in the advisory and whether or not those particular vulnerabilities were particularly easy to exploit. Again, no shade being thrown at ChatGPT-4, absolutely no shade being thrown at the researchers who did this, but not all things are created equal. There's a lot of assumptions being made here. One, any vulnerability could have been selected. That's an assumption. Two, it was able to completely exploit it to, you know, remote code execute or whatever, like to get admin privileges. We don't get the context of what vulnerabilities, so how easy were they and how well documented were the advisories. We don't get information on what level of exploitation there was, right? Is it just dorking up the box? Is it getting system level access? Is it just popping in for a second and then setting off all the EDR alarms? You know what I mean? So like before we run with this headline and start, you know, packing the bunker, we should look into it because details matter, right? I just want to preface that. Like, unfortunately, just as a quick editorial, in our world right now, people only read the headline sometimes and then form full opinions based on just the headline, right? And I've been guilty of doing it a little bit from time to time. Like when Wendy's was going to do the price surging on their menu, that was not really ever implemented. It was a concept I misunderstood and I ran with it. So details matter, okay?
Cell carrier workers solicited for SIM swaps. Bleeping Computer reports that employees at T-Mobile and Verizon both report receiving cold call text messages on work and personal phones offering up to $300 to perform a SIM swap. Various reports of the campaign on Reddit show texts claiming that the sender got the phone number off an employee directory. T-Mobile acknowledged these reports and said it's investigating, but said it did not suffer another data breach. The FBI received over 2,000 SIM swap complaints in 2023, resulting in over $72 million in losses.
All right. So T-Mobile, I met someone from T-Mobile yesterday at the conference. I don't know if she's in chat right now, but if you are, shout out to T-Mobile. Hey, Lupe Peterman. Good to see you. Okay, so check it out. T-Mobile. I feel like T-Mobile gets targeted for SIM swapping more than any other carrier. But, you know, basically, there's only a few, right? Ma Bell is back in here. Ma Bell with the ill communication, right? So T-Mobile, Verizon, I'm sure AT&T workers get solicited. Here's the deal. $300, right? That's not a lot of money. But if you think, I don't know how much the frontline workers at T-Mobile are making. But dude, if you can get $300 for doing basically just what your job is anyways, because they do SIM swapping as their normal course of business, you know, there's potential, right? Threat Mobile. Yeah. So here's my thing with this particular story. One, it's fairly easy in 2024 with OSINT recon to figure out who works at what stores. Getting their phone numbers isn't simple, but with data breaches happening so often, it's not that hard to get phone numbers. Plus, you got to remember, it's very, very cheap for threat actors to send wholesale smishing messages, right? These aren't even trying to be social engineering. This is literally, hey, do you want to be an accomplice in a crime? Here's $300 and you have plausible deniability because I'll make it seem legit that you asked me the questions. DJ Manny knows what I was doing there. So, you know what I mean? So like, basically it's kind of low to no risk for the frontline associate. It's a quick $300. And the threat actor is obviously going to make more than $300 off of the scam or else they wouldn't be offering $300. Another thing that's a really trick here. And again, just to kind of get the thoughts going and the wheels going. So we can, another thing I love to do is like basically go through my thought process. So you guys can, instead of just like, here's intel, take action. Like I want to relay, like even how to like, look at this story and think through it, not just the headline. On this particular one, you could educate. Listen, this is a scary plausibility. You could educate all the staff if you work at these phone companies. Hey, frontline workers, there's been a rash of people getting solicited to basically be an accomplice of a crime. If you get caught doing it, you will be fired, terminated, whatever, potential legal brought to you. But at the same time, you're telling frontline workers that there's a business opportunity. You have potential to make up to $300 by doing this. So it's a double-edged sword. If you worked at an organization and like say it's a SIM swap today, but it's something else tomorrow, right? People, financial analysts at a company are being offered $300 via smishing to like wire money out and click on a fake invoice, right? That could happen too. It's called insider threat. All you can do is put controls in place to either prevent staff from doing what they would need to do, which is going to be difficult because it's actually part of their normal job, right? SIM swapping is a legit service that there's reasons to do it. Or you put in detection controls so you can detect as soon as possible when an illicit SIM swap or an illicit wire transfer or something happens. This is why you got to have two keys to launch the nuke on the sub, right? All right.
State of DDoS report. Cloudflare released its Q1 DDoS threat report. It found a 50% increase on the year in mitigated DDoS attacks, up to 4.5 million in the quarter. Geopolitics played into this as DDoS attacks in Sweden spiked 466% after it entered into NATO. Cloudflare followed a similar pattern with Finland last year. HTTP-based DDoS attacks increased 93% on the year, while DNS-based attacks increased 80%, making up 54% of all network layer DDoS attacks. Cloudflare saw almost weekly attacks that peaked at over 1 terabit per second in volume, with the top 2024 attack from a Mirai botnet variant surpassing 2 terabits per second.
All right, here we go. Hey, fun question coming in from ModChat. Here, I'm gonna put a poll in chat because I think Casually Joseph's got a question. Should accepting a bribe to allow initial access be a crime, right? Someone gives you $1,000 to plug a USB drive in, no questions asked. You don't even know who they are. You don't know what the USB drive does. Is that a crime? Punishable by the law. Open polls are open. And I can't vote for some reason, which totally sucks, but I vote yes. Okay, so check it out. This is a vendor report. So remember, guys, when you read vendor reports, they typically have a bend that would highlight a problem that the vendor has a solution for. Now, this is Cloudflare. Cloudflare is a very legit organization that offers very legit services, including denial of service attack mitigation. Now, Cloudflare, just in Q1, so we're talking January, February, and March of Q1, just finished a few weeks ago, they mitigated 4.5 million attacks, not 4.5 million packets of data, not 4.5 million bytes of data, 4.5 million attacks, which is frankly unbelievable. They have different levels of attacks, guys. You can attack at the app layer. John Strand's, bane of his existence. If you subscribe to the OSI layer, the app layer, right? The top three layers, the layers I tell students to just ignore. You can do it at the transport layer. You can do it, mostly at the transport layer, right? I think you might be able to do it at the network layer, if I'm not mistaken, if you just like straight up spam. But anyways, the important point here is they said when Sweden joined NATO, they had an uptick in activity, all this stuff. Guys, it's not surprising. Major denial of service threat actors right now. Killnet from Russia. I haven't seen Killnet in a minute, so I don't know if they're on sabbatical or whatever, but Killnet was quite popular. Anonymous Sudan is another hot one, right? They're out there. Get your Matthew McConaughey Wolf of Wall Street. Like Anonymous Sudan isn't putting up rookie numbers, right? They're going big. So what's interesting. Okay, so anyways, denial of service. If you work for an organization that has an internet-facing presence, like especially if it's an online store or a SaaS solution, you absolutely should have denial of service mitigation services. If you are a business that has VPN for going into your business, you could put some type of denial of service attack around it, but maybe you cross that bridge when you get burned the first time. Second of all, and I think this is really, really interesting. This is a more you know moment. So squad members, we have an emote for this, the more you know, because I did a little bit of research on Anonymous Sudan recently. Anonymous Sudan, classic threat actor doing denial of service attacks, but normally you compromise a lot of infrastructure and then use that as part of your botnet, right? So think of Mirai botnet, famously, MIRAI. If you don't know about Mirai botnet, definitely Google it, right? As much as I said APT44 Sandworm earlier, Mirai botnet is 100% something you should know about. Mirai compromised a bunch of assets, weaponizes those. Anonymous Sudan, they actually rent infrastructure and just build out their denial of service attack capability and then pay I don't think they do it with AWS, but they basically have like a monthly cloud compute bill that they pay. And because compute is so expensive, and Anonymous Sudan, which is a hacktivist organization, has bills to pay. Am I right?
Great cash, homie.
They actually offer their services to sell for anyone if you want. So like if I wanted to do a denial of service attack on Casually Joseph, right? Like Casually Joseph, this guy. So I'm going to launch a denial of service attack at him. I could hire Anonymous Sudan's infrastructure to attack him. So they're doing it to kind of pay the bills. It's like a bake sale for a nonprofit, but it's just interesting because you don't typically see threat actors basically standing up legitimate infrastructure. They usually compromise stuff. Yeah, Casually Joseph, I'm coming for you. You hear footsteps?
Catch me outside. How about that?
Now a word from our sponsor, Conveyor. Conveyor is the market-leading AI-powered platform that automates the entire customer security review process. From sharing your security posture and SOC 2 in a single portal to using that same information to automate answering security questionnaires with 90% accuracy. Use Conveyor to fly through any customer security review in minutes. It might sound like every other software claim out there, but there's a reason their customers have dubbed Conveyor their favorite security tool of the year. Test it out in a free proof of concept at conveyor.com.
All right. Hey, I know there's so many first timers here. Guys, oh, Jesus, Jerry, why don't you zoom in a little bit? I know there's so many first timers here. Welcome to the party, pal.
Welcome to the party, pal.
We do this every mid-roll. All right, guys. Hey, if you're getting educational value, entertainment value, any value whatsoever, edutainment, do me a favor. Hit that like button on YouTube. Why? Because it helps YouTube algorithm trigger to go tell other people searching for cyber content what we're doing over here. What does that mean, Jerry? Guys, if you were a first timer at some point, which all of you were, it may have been because it just popped up in your YouTube feed and it's like, hey, look at what's going on over here. That's because the day before, a bunch of people hit the like button. So pay it forward, please. I love playing the sounder.
Welcome to the party, pal.
So hit that like button, okay? Now check it out. I want to say shout out and thanks to the stream sponsors, of course, Barricade Cyber, Delete Me, and Anti-Siphon Training. Guys, if you don't know about Anti-Siphon Training, they're absolutely straight crushing it, homie. Anti-Siphon is disrupting the traditional cybersecurity training industry by providing high-quality, cutting-edge education to everyone, regardless of financial position. They offer their students the opportunity to learn skills, practice what is taught, and engage with the community in a fun and inclusive way. Literally, guys, they offer classes like this one, Active Defense and Cyber Deception, that's taught by former SANS instructor John Strand for free. You pay what you want for many of these classes. So go to antisiphontraining.com. If you want, use the link I had on the screen. I know it's harder to do. It does tracking. Anti-Siphon doesn't really ask me for metrics, which is awesome. So look at this. NIST CSF 2.0 framework. Come at me, bro. Who's this guy? Nathan Sweeney. Can we get Nathan Sweeney on the channel? GRC love making it happen. All right. Hey, Nerman's dropping a super chat. Thanks, Nerman. Dr. Osier, Simply Cyber's boosted my cyber skills with its practical courses and informative videos. The community offers excellent networking and insights from experts. It's valuable resource for professional growth. Thank you. You know what? Thank you, Nerman, not just for the super chat, but for showing up every day, sharing resources, being part of the community. Hashtag Team SC. First timers, this is what's happening all the time. Now, every single day of the week has a special segment, and I'm very proud to point out that on Thursdays, our very own The Haircut Fish, he's in chat right now, Dan Reardon, makes a custom meme for me or for the community, and I show it. I do not censor it. I do not review or approve it. I just let it fly. If you're familiar with the new Fallout series, Vault Tech, there we go. I'm in Vault 77, which I think was like the nuclear one that they got experimented on. There you go. So Fallout, if you're a Fallout fan, welcome to the party, pal. If you're not, it's going to be all up in your feeds because they just released the show on Netflix, I believe. All right, guys. Thanks so very much. Oh, my God. The Zoom. All right. Thanks so very much, guys. Normally, I'd let the audio flow to the la-la-la-las, but unfortunately, it's Thursday. I got to get out of here to go to Citadel, so we're going to keep rolling. Let's go.
ASML still dependent on China. Given the multi-year chip-making technology export bans imposed by the U.S. against China, it's somewhat surprising to see that the Dutch chip-making equipment giant ASML still counts the country as its biggest market. In its most recent earnings report, China accounted for 49% of system sales, up from just 8% a year ago, even as the proportion of sales to the U.S. and Taiwan fell on the year. U.S. export bans cut off sales of cutting-edge chip-making equipment, but allow for sales of more mature technology.
All right. Hey, couple things here. One, this kind of story comes up all the time recently, right? I'm not going to belabor it for the sake of time. Basically, there's a chip war between the United States and China, and then there's proxies like Japan and Netherlands that are getting all up in the mix. Now, in complete ignorance, okay, this is a completely ignorant thing about me, and but I very much am transparent. They say Dutch chip maker. I literally get confused. Are the Netherlands and Dutch people the same? Like, are Dutch people from the Netherlands? Like, so when they say Dutch chip maker, does that mean the Netherlands is making chips, which would be counter to like what the Netherlands signed? If that's not the case, and Dutch is Dutchy. I don't know. I feel like the Dutch and Netherlands, like America, Americans, China, Chinese. Like, it's very obvious what country the citizens are from. And I always get confused with Dutch. And like, to throw a wrench in the work, sometimes you say Deutsch, right? Isn't Deutsch German, right? So I'm just saying, okay. Now, really quick, you see that proportion of sales from Taiwan is more than halved. Of course, China and Taiwan have their own, like, beef, right? Because China doesn't recognize Taiwan as a country. They think it's like the state of Alaska, like the way, you know, like, it'd be like us saying that, like, Manitoba is not part of Canada. It's actually a U.S. state, right? I'm gonna go vacation up in Yellowknife, just north of Regina. And that's actually how you say it. So anyways, Chipmaker Wars, I'm sure there'll be a great documentary somewhere in the next couple years on the Chip Wars that's going to be on Netflix. Oh, thank you. Age Tinsdale, Netherlands, Holland, Dutch. That's what I'm saying. Why do you got to make it so hard, bro? Can't we just have like one name? I hate to be so American and try to like dictate that everybody, conform to something that I want. I will say I'm firmly in the camp that they should be teaching the metric system in the United States. I feel dumb that I know the English measurement system. That's kind of what I default to. But we will persevere.
15 malware still at work in Ukraine. Researchers at Cisco Talos discovered that a piece of malware known as Awful Router caused documents from government and police sources in Ukraine to get uploaded to VirusTotal. This shows its age by only spreading via sneakernet on removable media and targeting files with a .doc extension. Ukrainian National Police files also saw exfiltration through Awful Router in 2018, indicating that the virus survived on media for over 5 years in the same environment. It's unclear what group uses the malware.
All right. Oh, all right. It's devolving in private chat on Restream, talking about Dutchies, Dutch Master. Get that Method Man in here. Gotta split it, roll it, smoke it. Got the woo. All right, so we should have a woo sound effect. We'll just do that one, okay? A Dutch oven, that's also on the table, okay? Decade-old malware haunts Ukrainian police. Okay, guys, guess what? When you write malware, it's code. It will run indefinitely, long after humans expire. If there's infrastructure and there's power going to it, it'll be running code unbeknownst to everybody. I also want to point out that in some organizations, there's like, this is a true story. People write in-house code, in-house apps. Oh, it won't cost us anything. We'll make it. And then the business becomes dependent on it. This is shadow IT. And then people leave or people die. In one instance, I had someone who passed away, and they were the app was running on their credentials on a machine, an Access database backend, and people were terrified to like reset the machine or do anything to it because they didn't know what credentials the guy used on the thing. All right, so more than 100 docs containing confidential information related to the police.
Regulators, Mauna. It was a.
All right. You can see here the malware. This is kind of a classic thing. Guys, if you ever are looking for malware and you pop open Task Manager and look at the executable names and you're like, oh, nothing looks sus here. Guys, yes, you can have binary names and executables that are like just gibberish and stuff like that. But like good malware, they're going to name it like Control Panel or WinSUS or, you know, NTDLL, like they're not going to be written as like Sandworm was here. This isn't the mid 90s where you're trying to get street cred. Like, ooh, Serial Killer was here. Acid Burn, Crash Overdrive. Ooh, get in my belly. No. Sophisticated threat actors. It's espionage, man. They're trying to lay low. I do want to say shout out to Talos. Cisco Talos was the threat intel org that scooped on this. They are awesome. I love Cisco Talos. They're in my, I don't want to call them my Mount Rushmore because that's a little strong, but they're in my pantheon of threat intel resources that I absolutely respect. So this story is kind of confusing because there's a bunch of files that were uploaded, but now they're talking about five-year-old malware. So basically, I guess they're saying that the infection happened years ago, and either despite updates, like, you know, operating system upgrades and, you know, whatever, it's still there. One thing I would point out is if the system was infected in 2018, I mean, that's 7 years ago. Can we talk about system development lifecycle? Like, normally you replace legacy systems when they end life, not because they have malware potentially in them, but because they're no longer supported, because they're aging infrastructure, because that's how business works. All right. So the fact that this thing persisted leads me to believe, just from a nerd GRC perspective, that the Ukrainian police probably aren't funding their IT infrastructure very well, FYI. So there's that. Yeah. So anyways, standard practice, dude. Keep your EDRs up to date. By the way, a 2015 virus, EDRs should be catching those at this point. So there's a lot wrong. There's a lot wrong with this. Okay. So it sucks. Hopefully now that they know, knowing's half the battle, right? Threat intel. Now that they know, maybe they can take action on it.
Botnets flock to old TP-Link flaw.
I know. So Isaac the Noble says, are you kidding? They are for infinity. Let me just share something really quickly. This is a reality. If you haven't worked in corporate America, and you really will see this in the GRC side of things, when you ask for money, okay, to replace aging infrastructure, the business says, well, what's wrong with the current infrastructure? And you say, it's end of life. And they say, does it still work? And you're like, that's not the point. And they're like, that wasn't the question I asked you. Does it still work? Well, yes or no? Yes. Next question. And it's like, no! Like, you're missing the forest for the trees. Roar! You know, and I'm not suggesting anyone spike their own infrastructure, but typically you need, like, this is why the phrase, this is a real phrase, so put it on a shirt. Never let a good incident go to waste, right? Never let a breach go to waste. This is why, unfortunately, in our industry, sometimes we have to use fear or doubt or an active compromise as an opportunity to put smelling salts under the CFO and CEO's nose and be like, guess how they got in? Aged infrastructure. Oh my God. How did we let this happen? And you definitely can't say, well, do you remember that meeting 6 months ago when I asked you and you were such a peckerhead about say yes or no? Do you remember that meeting? You can't say that. You just have to say, well, it's been on our risk register for quite some time and we've identified it as an acceptable risk, but we are now prepared to elevate the impact of that risk, and the likelihood obviously will increase because we are actively compromised. We are now requesting budget to replace that asset. And they're like, yeah, blank check. Let's go. And you're like, sorry. That was a low key F bomb.
In a blog post, researchers at FortiGuard Labs Threat Research found that several botnets continue to exploit a year-old flaw in the TP-Link Archer AX21 Wi-Fi router. TP-Link patched the flaw on April 27, 2023, but because router firmware often gets neglected, it's still being exploited. This unauthenticated command injection vulnerability in the local API is accessible through the router's web portal. Researchers find Mirai variants, Mubot, Miori, and Aogent botnets using the exposed routers.
Yeah. Welcome to the party, pal. Like, IoT devices. Hey, 2017 called. You're still terrible. You're still terrible. Your security by default is gross. Your security capabilities are often, you know, lackluster. If you're running, I mean, okay, so basically, what can you do with this information so we can get you sorted out? If you're running the TP-Link Archer AX21 Wi-Fi router in your environment, look into this. You could be hosed. TP-Link, as far as I know, is typically reserved for more like small business, mid-sized business, right? You're not going to see this at a, like a hospital that's got multiple facilities and WAN links and stuff like that. You're not going to see TP-Link infrastructure. So depending on where you are, you might not see this. So Flatten now says TP-Link Archer is quite popular. Let me know, guys. Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that this would be more likely in a small, medium-sized business. If this is on your home network, I think you're going to be okay. It still could get compromised, so you do want to update it, but it would be behind infrastructure. It looks like it's being used in distributed denial of service attacks. Again, remember with malware like Mirai, which I mentioned earlier, it will compromise your device. And now it's just part of the botnet. Like you can still use the device to go on the internet and watch Fallout stream live. It's just when the threat actor wants to use it for attacking another target, A, your machine is being brought into the fold as an attacker, and B, you're going to start buffering on Netflix because all your traffic's going to be going to a victim machine. Low-key F-bomb sounds like a jazz band. I love it, Josh. That's so funny. So anyways, patch your stuff. Right? And by the way, I just want to point out that Mirai originally just attacked default creds, but obviously forks of Mirai like Miori and Mubot and stuff like that have gone one step further because this particular attack is a command injection vulnerability attack. So just be mindful of that. Okay. So the TLDR here is if you're running TP-Link Archer, get it sorted out. If you're a student or studying or trying to break in, you should familiarize yourself with botnets, Mirai botnet, how it works, and the story of how the code got leaked publicly.
Election disinformation efforts kicked into gear. A new report from Microsoft's Threat Analysis Center detailed that over the last 45 days, Russian election disinformation campaigns have ramped up activity in the U.S. much Shocker. Later than in the last several election cycles. Microsoft believes many prolific influence actors now work out of the Russian presidential administration rather than with intelligence agencies used in previous campaigns. These efforts attempt to undermine U.S. support of Ukraine, promote domestic discord, and turn public opinion against other NATO members. Right now, Microsoft hasn't seen widespread deception from high-quality deepfake videos, but it's partnered with Democracy Forward and AI for Good Lab to identify Gen AI usage for misinformation this campaign cycle. Remember to check.
All right. So, you know, in the from the office of Shocker, disinformation efforts have kicked into high gear. Okay, guys, we are 6 months from elections, U.S. presidential elections. You got to get the machine going, right? When the train leaves the station, it's only doing 2 miles an hour. You got to get up to speed and get going. Because if here's the thing, if a disinformation campaign just came out on like November 1st, it'd be like, oh, this is really weird. This is a shocker. So low and slow, you got to boil the frog low and slow, which is a disgusting metaphor. And I wish I hadn't said it, but it's going to haunt my dreams tonight. So here we go. They said that they haven't seen deepfake type stuff yet. That's going to be coming. Again, using 2016, disinformation is kind of a playbook. They've got better tools now. They've got better assets. I would say this is a completely editorial opinion. Tinfoil hat. Here we go. Again, this is just my perspective from where I'm sitting. I think one thing that's like not going to work in the favor of this campaign of Russian disinformation to meddle with U.S. elections is that I feel like the United States citizenship is almost like apathetic at this point about government leaders. So, you know, we got you. So expect to see this misinformation, disinformation. If I had to guess, we're going to start seeing more stories in the news of this. I do want to say shout out to Jen Easterly of CISA, who is responsible for election security. Individual states have state election information security. Shout out to DEF CON, which has a voting hacking village, which has been going on for years. So remember, it's really difficult to attack and like effectively hack the technical side of the voting process. But it's really easy to get humans all frothed up and mixed up, right? So expect, you know, like think of Sora, the open AI tool that makes video based on whatever you want to say. Why don't you type in like ballot people destroying ballot boxes or throwing ballots in the ocean or, you know, Trump, you know, doing this or Biden doing that, right? So unfortunately, it's hot. If I had to guess, final speculative hot take before moving on to the final story, if I had to guess, I think the deepfake videos and deepfake content will be coming out like November 1st, 2nd, 3rd, like right at the apex before the election, where there's not enough time to really communicate and point out how fake these things are and, you know, take them down and stuff like that. I really, really hope that Meta, Twitter, Google, like all the social media platforms are like prepped and ready with like a task force to kind of handle this information. It's really difficult, right? Like in the United States, we're allowed to have differing opinions. That's the great part about being an American. But at the same time, it's different. It's difficult to sift disinformation from real opinion and real thought. All right, let's keep going on to the final story. Now, I just want to give a shout out to this one. This was not in the CISO series, so I don't have an audio for it. I will read it the way I do when the CISO series stories audio breaks. But I'm collaborating with Cisco today. Of course, Cisco is going to be my guest later today. Craig Connors from Cisco. I told you about him. Chief Technology Officer, Vice President, 19 patents. The dude's crushing it. But you'll see that they just announced Cisco Hypershield, aiming to reimagine security in the AI age. I'll drop a link to this story in chat right now. Here's the story. Boom. Right. So using my ChatGPT technique, right? So I've taken the same story and I've used my ChatGPT summarizer, and you could see that Cisco announced, I'm going to read it like as the story would be read objectively, and then I'll give some my opinions and stuff like that, right? Cisco announced today Cisco Hypershield, which embeds security into data center fabric autonomously. Considered game-changing and innovative, the AI Impact Tour in San Francisco explored responsible AI integration, and Cisco's Hypershield addresses three challenges that we have, right? Exploit protection, segmentation, and upgrades. It's AI native, self-managing, which is interesting, and cloud native using the open source eBPF. All right, it automates vulnerability management, deploying compensating controls, and autonomous segmentation, and utilizes digital twin technology for testing and deploying upgrades. All right, so that's the story. Here's some subjective thoughts, okay? This is really interesting, and I've been working with Cisco over the last couple of weeks on this particular initiative. So I've seen this Hypershield. I wasn't allowed to talk about it because it was under embargo, but I've seen it. I've talked about it. I've understood it. And basically, the idea behind it is that it's going to be moving kind of at AI speeds. If we go back to the very first story here about OpenAI's ChatGPT can exploit real vulnerabilities by reading security advisories, we're talking about the speed of AI being able to quickly take an advisory and write an exploit and then push it to exploitation. So normally you have some type of dwell time of when a patch is released and you can get it fixed. And if you don't fix it quick enough, then you could get hosed. With this, because that human element of how quickly you can do it is a problem, that's one of the things that Hypershield is looking to solve, is basically identifying vulnerabilities, right? Low-hanging fruit, and getting those fixed. And you might say, well, dude, whoa. If you're going to patch in my production environment, you might bring down systems. And my understanding is that's what this digital twin situation is, where they're basically going to spin up a digital twin instance in memory, basically, of that system, patch it, verify that it works, and then switch it over automatically. So kind of the gist behind this Hypershield thing is that it's going to allow you to move quicker because it's going to handle a lot of the low-hanging stuff. Also, they mentioned network segmentation, which is a massively valuable control. I don't know if it goes for like micro-segmentation where like each individual asset's its own network segment. Maybe we can ask Craig Connors about it later today. But yeah, really, really interesting. Cisco coming off the top ropes with an elbow bomb to deliver basically a security technology, continuing that security train. We've seen them get Duo. We've seen them get Splunk, Cisco Talos, right? The threat intel agency, right? So here we go. Let's go find out. Okay. So thank you. I almost said Cisco again. All right. We're going to find out. Obviously, this is, to me, guys, this is innovative. So with any new innovation comes challenges and questions, like how does the digital twin work? If you patch something and it breaks, what do we do, right? So I'm hoping that Craig can be able to help us understand and answer some of those questions. I do want to point out that later today at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time, we're going to be talking to Craig Connors. It's important to point out the point of this talk is actually to talk about the modern cyber threat landscape, right? But obviously, Cisco dropped this Hypershield thing today, so we'll definitely talk to him a little bit about it. All right, guys. I hope you got value from the stream. Stay tuned. We've got jawjacking with our very own DJ B-Sec coming in a hot minute. But I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Guys, I just want to tell you all really quickly, all the first timers who were here, welcome to the party, pal. I hope you had a great experience. I hope you had a great show. I hope you met some new people in chat, and I hope you come back tomorrow. I love the community. Hashtag Team SC. I bleed Simply Cyber, and we try to make it as entertaining and as accessible as we possibly can. All right, I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. Until next time, stay secure. Let's pivot. Pivot to the left, to the left. Get your Beyonce on. To the left, right? I probably shouldn't sing like that. All right, getting that head nod. Please don't do Beyonce. Is that what you're saying there?
Please don't do that.
Okay. All right, very good. So DJ B-Sec's going to take on a 30-minute Ask Me Anything jawjacking.
Yeah, I want to know. It's been a couple of days since we've had one. So we'll spend all this morning just answering questions. I'm sure people got questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring your questions, all you first timers. You want to know what's going on. B-Sec's got, 300 years of professional experience. You can see it by
all the gray.
Yeah. So let him take it over. Thanks so much, B-Sec. Hey, everybody, thank you so very much. And I'll see you at 4:30 p.m. Eastern time for the Simply Cyber live event. Bye, B-Sec. Bye, everybody.
All right. I think that was a little smoother transition. I don't have any news to go over this morning, so we're going to throw it all out to you guys. Y'all throw out your questions. Let's talk about it. Let's answer it. The one thing I did want to talk about real quick was what Jerry was talking about with Cisco. Sounds kind of like to me, and I guess we'll find out tonight or at about 4:30 Eastern, is whether or not it's kind of like having a backup of a virtual machine just sitting there that you're patching and testing and patching and testing and patching and testing. It'll be interesting to hear about that new technology. Oh, who is better? Is that even a question? We've got who is better. Let me switch this so we can get everybody's chats in here. Who is better, Beyonce? I am not a better Beyonce, so I guess we can throw that to Jerry, but I'm not a better Beyonce. Don't even try to put that on me. All right, what do we got? Anybody questions? I know we've been without jawjacking for a couple of days. We didn't have anything Tuesday, and then yesterday I wanted to jump in after Jerry while he was on his doing his talk, but I actually had things I needed. I had personal things I needed to do and get taken care of. Usually around that same time, I'm taking my kids to school, so I wasn't able to jump in that fast. Got a question here. Do you know anyone who's done the DoD COISP scholarship? And there's Peter. I do not. I don't know anybody that has done that. Somebody that might know, and I don't know if Josh is in chat at all, but Josh Mason may know somebody that's done that. He may be able to give you a good answer on that one. Jazzy Jeff, let me find that one because that's a good question. Where did that go? Jazzy Jeff is talking about the Palo Alto patch, and we can talk about that. All right, so recently, what happened with the recent Palo Alto hack? Are they not able to apply a patch? So Palo Alto didn't get hacked. They have a patch for that. If you are a Palo Alto user, let me see if I can't find this site. We'll go through all of this. Palo Alto Security. So Palo Alto has a great website for their security advisories. Let me pull this up. Let's go through this. I think I can zoom this in. Hopefully everybody can hear me and the music's okay. So Palo Alto has a ton of different versions of their PAN-OS. And depending on what you're doing, what you're running, you may only be upgraded to 10.0. You may only be upgraded to 10.1. Each version has its own subversion. So you've got like a 10.1.1 or 10.1.2 on up, right? So you can come over here if you're running Palo Alto. So if you are somebody that knows your company's running Palo Alto, and you want to give them, hey, here's a link. In fact, let me drop this link in chat and you guys can have it. And that way you can bring it to whomever you need to. It'll come in under Jerry's name. But in here, depending on what version you're running, you can type in your version. So if you're running a version, there's a whole bunch of versions and some of the versions aren't even in here. So if you run in version 10.1, let's say 10.1.11, now you see that you got 10.1.11 and then you've got H1, H2, H3, H4, and that H means hotfix. So let's go to H5. When you click on that and you hit enter, that's gonna give you all the security advisories that you need to make sure are patched. Now, a lot of these patches are done automatically with Palo Alto. Palo Alto has what's called, basically it's just software that runs in the background. It's updates and it's not versioning updates, but they put out updates through Palo Alto every single day, sometimes hourly, that get pushed up and installed on the device. You can set that to automatically update. You can set that to automatically download and then update. But in here, you can go through and find out if you are vulnerable to that last attack. And I think if we just pull this out and we go to critical, I know we're kind of going long on this one, but if we pull it out and go to critical, I think the last one is the 10, which is this one right here, right? So basically what this is saying is if you're running 10.1 point anything, you are not vulnerable to this, right? Nothing is affected. Everything is unaffected. So if you're running any of those versions, you're fine. If you're running version 10.2, 11 or 11.1, then you need to upgrade or update your Palo Alto device or your VM to whichever patch they have on here, right? So it needs to be affected and patched. So that's that for Palo Alto. Let me switch back over. Hopefully that answers the question, Jazzy Jeff. Man, we got a lot of questions flying in. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to put them all up on. Is a junior SOC entry position one that would allow you to pivot into pen testing? Howard, so junior SOC entry level position, it's going to allow you to see a whole bunch of vulnerabilities and what's going on. So anything in the industry, any position in the industry is going to allow you to pivot to whatever, right? You are in the industry and you're learning what's going on. So in a SOC, within a SOC, you're going to learn how to look at traffic, what's going on with the traffic. You're going to see alerts. You're going to see, that's going to give you kind of the blue side of what to expect as a pen tester. So you can use that knowledge that you gained from being in the SOC and use it as a pen tester, right? So you can turn around and go, okay, I remember when I was in the SOC that I saw XYZ in my logs. So let's make sure that we don't do that when we pen test and see if we can get past something. So yeah, that's a way to move across. I just want to say, let's see, Eric, we are flying this morning. I see one in here that says, B-Sake, any common mistakes you have seen sysadmin or security rookies make that are easily avoidable? Very much so. When it comes to a system administrator, or I'm not going to say a security rookie, right? Because if you're doing security, you're probably learning, you're new to it. Hopefully you've got somebody that's helping you out. But there are always mistakes that happen. Of course, the biggest one is just taking something and throw it into a rack and let it go. Not changing the default usernames and passwords on stuff, not locking stuff down, not if you have the ability, not going to your manager or the people above and letting them know, hey, there are things in here that can easily be avoided by turning on MFA. The system administration, doing a patch or an update in the middle of the day and taking the system down. You should always have maintenance windows. There's a lot of things that happen in the industry that you can call a rookie mistake. You can say that most of the stuff is easily avoidable. If the stuff's running, then what we want to do is we don't want to mess with it during the day. Let it run during the day and then pick your maintenance windows and work on it then. Let's see, Eric has said, I just want to say the Simply Cyber community was in good prep for the first person interview security conference last week. That was good. Peter, I got that one. Accountability Club, what's the framework of a remote SOC analyst need? Software tools. Accountability Club. So you're asking, what is a framework for remote SOC analyst? What do they need? Software tools and so on. That's going to all depend on the company, because it depends on what that company is running, what you're doing, and if you even get allowed to do SOC work remotely. Some companies make sure that the SOC is housed and put in one specific place and nothing goes in and out of there. So that all depends on the company itself. Of course, you're going to have a SIM. You're going to have different types of tools to monitor, to look at, but it all depends on what the company that you're working for, what the company does, what they use. Okay, Jane Michael says, question. Yes, that's exactly how I think the Cisco support or Cisco is supposed to work. What problems do you foresee if that is how it works? Hardware imitations. So, Jane Michael, he's talking about he's replying to what I said about Cisco and possibly using like a VM backup of some sort. What I would say, so I don't necessarily see problems with that, because what you're doing is if they're doing, we'll have to find out today, but if they are making a complete replica side by side, I'll just go with like a 1900 router. So you have like a 1900 router and it's got a issue. Those are old routers that are no longer end of life. They're all end of life. But say you have a Cisco router over here. You take that image, you take that firmware and you put it into a virtual environment, maybe GNS3 or something like that. And then all of a sudden you find out that this has an issue, right? So this router that's in production has an issue. Well, you can't necessarily just go throw patches at that production router, because you could probably take it down. So what you want to do is have that virtual environment, or maybe even a side-by-side physical router, and update that firmware and test. I think that's what they're talking about doing. It seems like that's what they're talking about doing. We'll find out today. I don't necessarily see any issues or limitations, because you're going to continue to make an exact replica of what's going on, right? And as long as you have an exact replica, then you should be able to go, okay, yes, it works, and then you can push the patch out. Let's see, Megan Gray. What's one extremely specific cyber niche that you're passionate about? Man, well, I know Jerry's all about GRC. I don't know if I'm passionate about one specific thing. When it just comes to security or cybersecurity in general, I'm passionate about that, because I can't stand to see things that should be patched, things that I can't stand to see people get, you know, click on a message, get a text message. I hate seeing it from the older generation, my parents, or the younger generation, my kids. I hate seeing them getting messages or doing things and just, for lack of a better term, willy-nilly doing clicking, right? Or getting caught up into a scam. to me, it's all about it's teaching. I guess you could say that I'm passionate about teaching what I know to others to let them to bring them in and to have them understand. Because what I don't want, I would hate to know something that could help somebody out and then just, oh, hey, I read something today that could help you over here, and you never tell them, and then something happens to them and you go, yeah, well, I read about that a couple days ago and it cost them $10,000, or it cost them, you know, something else. Teaching, when it comes to cybersecurity, teaching and making sure, trying to educate everybody just on the little things. Like, everybody doesn't need to know how to configure a firewall or how to block traffic or do that, but everybody should understand and everybody should know that when a message comes in from somebody you've never heard of before in your life, and they're sending you an attachment or sending you to a link, you don't click on that. Like, why would you? You wouldn't just randomly walk up to you. You don't just, you know, this brings you back to like the 80s when our parents would say, you don't walk up to the guy in the white van that's handing out candy, right? So here, this is the same concept. You don't just click on something because somebody sent it to you. So to answer the question, I guess it would be my passion is to make sure that everybody is educated at least in some way, shape, or form when it comes to cybersecurity. Abdullah says, what is the best intro into GRC course to take? Oh, well, I mean, you're here, so you'd want to go to Jerry's GRC course. Jerry's GRC course is amazing. Let me pull this up. Jerry has put together an amazing GRC course. Where are we at? GRC course, the masterclass right here. GRC Analyst Masterclass right here. Come to Simply Cyber. In fact, I will put it in chat. You got Simply Cyber Academy. That's not Threat Actor Academy, but Simply Cyber Academy. Click on here. Jerry goes through everything, teaches you about GRC. That is your gateway in right there. Open the door, kick it down, and go for it. Casually Joseph is in the background talking about free Bitcoin when it comes to messages. So everybody, if you have Casually Joseph's email, send him free Bitcoin links, and more than likely you can get into his machine. What are your thoughts on AWS Cloud Institute? Helena, I have not looked at the AWS Cloud Institute. I deal a lot with the Microsoft Cloud Institute, with Azure and so forth. I don't deal with AWS. So when it comes to my thoughts on AWS, I don't really have any because I haven't dealt with it that much as of yet. Reed is saying, any tips, resources for building a SOAR lab? Oh, I think there is a, let's look at this. Is there one on 101 Labs? I've not built a lab around a SOAR, but I'm wondering if there's not one on here on 101 Labs. Let's see. That's fine. No, it doesn't look like it's there. That is a question that is past me. Maybe somebody else in chat may know about building a SOAR lab, but I don't have any take on building that SOAR, building out a SOAR lab. Any common mistake you have seen as, oh, I saw that one already. So where are we at? We're all caught up. Oh, it's already 8:20. Man, time flies when you're having fun. Do we have anything? Let's go back through here and look and see if there's anything else. I'm searching through here for questions. We're sitting here with, I don't want to sit here and have a lull and everything. All right, Ian Michaels, see what they're saying here. But will that be Cisco side or will it be the customer side for the side-by-side? Most companies, no. So my understanding from what Jerry read is this is all the Cisco side. Cisco has their equipment. Cisco has their physical stuff. They'll have all that, and they are going to be the ones that are going to patch everything, set it all up, and then they'll push that out. It kind of sounds like what Palo Alto's doing with their automatic patches, where you can set it up to automatically patch your stuff. Of course, the deal with getting an automatic patch could be that patch may take down what you're doing if you have it automatically patched. So I think what Cisco is trying to do here is run through different scenarios by having something side by side. And when I say side by side, I don't mean the customer is sitting here with their router and then Cisco gives them another one and they're sitting side by side. I mean, there's an image of this machine. There's an image of this physical router here that Cisco has over here, and the image itself is the firmware. It's not the configuration. It's not all of that. It's the firmware itself to make sure that everything works. We'll see. We'll find out more today. It'll be interesting to understand and hear. Looks like Carrie's, I missed what Carrie said. He was saying something in here. Oh, here you go. Who is this? Justin Rohr. That was one of the main reasons I started trying to get into cyber. My mom got scammed for $1,000 and then almost had a repeating charge taken out every month. Wow. So I kind of had something similar. My parents they were trying to buy king crab or something like that. Somebody sent them a message and said, oh, you can get king crab for, I don't know, let's say the price was $20 a leg or $20 a pound. And they said, oh, you can get it for 10. They're like, oh, really? And they did that. So luckily all that, I mean, using credit cards or using PayPal, you get your money back. So it wasn't a big deal, but those are the type of things. Like if normally, right, what is the saying? If it's too good to be true, it probably is. More than likely, if it's too good to be true, it probably is. We are all looking for the cheapest things we can find, and usually the cheapest ain't the best, and more than likely if it's that cheap, probably a scam. What do we got here? Sonder says, if you're tasked on evaluating an application / software for your organization for security risk, do you have any go-to resources that reference? So when it comes to evaluating applications, I think I talked about this before, when it comes to evaluating software applications, I myself will tell whomever it is, whatever department, whatever it is, you go find the software, you go find what you want to do. You know what you need it to do. I want you to bring it back to me. Hey, we have application A. This is it. It works great. It does, you know, XYZ. 90% of everything, we're going to have ROI, we're going to get time back. And then that's when I dig into it. Okay, what is it you're trying to get out of the application? What does it actually do? Are you using the whole application, right? So if we're paying $100 for this application, are you only using $10 worth of the application, or are you using $90 or $95 worth of the application? Number one, that's where I start. So where's the ROI in it? So now we got ROI. Now, who's the company that built it? What, you know, are they? Do they have a good rating? How many customers do they actually have? Do they have multi-million customers? They're a multi-million-dollar company? Is it just a small mom-and-pop shop that built this application and put it out? How long has this application been out? Did it just come out? There's a lot of things that go in with that. Then you contact that company. As the person that's in IT, there's insecurity, you contact that company, you have them do a walkthrough with you, you start asking them questions. You put together, as somebody that's in IT or somebody in security, we all know that we get those security assessments, they come into us, and it's like, hey, I need you to go fill out this 400 sheet Excel spreadsheet, So turn that and reverse it on that application. Hey, I need to know what your security measures are. Is this in the cloud? Is this a SaaS application? If it is, how do you make sure that the information that I'm putting in there is secure? Are you SOC 2 compliant? Do you run backups? Do you keep the data? Where is it? You know, do you sell data to data brokers? Those type of questions, you know, hit them hard. They'll answer. And if they don't, then, you know, turn around and say like, well, maybe we need to look at a different product. That's how I go about the security side or the IT side. The department, whoever wants it, they're just worrying about the functionality. We need to actually worry about the data and the integrity of it, right? What do we got next? See, Jonathan Lindsay says, do you think you or Gerald would like decent daily news produced by... I don't know, what is that? Let me check this out. Who's it? You said it's produced by Insights. I'm not actually seeing that. Jonathan Lindsay, if you have a link to something like that, then I'll look at it. This should be interesting. That'd be great to see. Let's see. Yeah, I do. So you know what? I do want to show you guys this. So everybody knows Tyler Ramsey from the community. Last week he finished up his hacker rap, and last night he actually dropped it like it's hot. He put it out on his YouTube channel. He actually was live last night, but he put it live for everybody to have for free. Let's see. Let's pull this up. So everybody knows this guy right here, and last night he went live with it, but he also has his, there we go. He's got his new rap that he dropped. Awesome tunes. Let me put this into chat here. Everybody can go and download this. He actually paid somebody to create a video for it. So it's pretty awesome. So we got Tyler in here. It's an amazing little rap, and it goes with the community, right? The whole community in itself of teaching, learning, great words behind it. It's awesome. Go look at it, go download it. Go sit in the sock and blare it. That'd be awesome. All right, it is 8:29. I'm not seeing many more questions come through. I am seeing people chat. Jazzy Jeff, I want to build a home lab. Any recommendations on a desk or chair? I would definitely recommend on having a desk and a chair if you're going to build a home lab. Definitely. No. When it comes to a desk, you can see me standing right now. I have a raising desk, a desk will go up and down. Definitely, I would recommend definitely having one of those. You can attach everything. In fact, let me see. This is dead. I usually have this set up for my Twitch stream. I don't know if I can get this to work here, but I have I've got a video camera that I can move around and show everything. But basically, what I would do is get a desk that will raise up and down, get some mounts for some monitors, put those on there. That way they'll raise up and down with it. You don't necessarily have to have them on the desk. You can mount them to the back of it. That way it raises up and down, gives you that, gives you the area. Yes, Jerry, I am going to cons. I plan on going to Wild West Hackenfest and high-fiving everybody there. Tickets are already bought. Planes already set. I'm just waiting for them to get it get it gassed up and ready to go, but I think it's going to take a couple months for them to do that. They got to pay for the gas, and they're paying for it real slow. So I think the plane's going to take off sometime in October. All right, it is 8:30. Oh, Jerry just popped in, and I didn't even think about this. He totally missed it. I'm glad he just threw it in here. Let me throw it out there now. We did not get somebody to do the community challenge today. Do we have anyone for the community challenge? So the Simply Cyber Community Challenge on LinkedIn. I believe we can just put in challenge. Throw that into chat. We do need to find somebody. I'm not sure who it was. Casually Joseph says Manny gets to meet me. Not if I can help it. I don't think anybody did we drop anything in? I'm looking through mod chat right now to see if we had somebody do the community challenge. I'm not sure we did. And I don't think we've got anybody. So if anybody wants to take the baton and do the community challenge today, community challenge means we'll hand you the baton. You go out to LinkedIn. On LinkedIn, you write up a little, it doesn't have to be a book, but you write up and you tell us why you got into cybersecurity, what you're doing now, your passions, and just kind of tell us the story of you. And why you are where you are today in cybersecurity. Kerry saying he could take it for a third time. That would be great if he took it for a third time, but we want to see somebody new grab it. Oh, look, we got Oscar in here. Oscar, the first timer. All right, so we'll pick up the baton tomorrow. But what I do want to remind everybody, tonight we've got at 4:30 Eastern time. So if you live on the East Coast, it's 4:30. If you live on Central, then it's going to be 3:30. And if you're way out there in the Pacific, I think that's going to be like 1:30. Jerry is going to have a cybersecurity fireside chat with Craig Connors, VP and CTO of Cisco Security. And then tonight, we've got Jesse J is saying he is coming back hot tonight for his Slay Security Plus. And it is my understanding that he will have a special guest tonight. You may already know that special guest. You may be listening to that special guest right now. But there will be a special guest tonight on Slay Security Plus with Jesse J, where we will bring you some real insights to security and talk about Security Plus. All right, so it is Thursday. What is today? Thursday, April 18th. It is now 8:34. I am going to go ahead and drop off. I have to go get ready for a meeting. I got a 9:00. I'm in the Central Time. I've got a 9:00 meeting. Until then, hopefully everybody has a great day. We hope to see everybody tonight at 4:30 and then possibly at 7 p.m. Eastern Time as well for Slay Security Plus. Until then, everybody have a great day and everybody stay secure.
If you enjoyed that content, keep the cybersecurity train going by connecting with the other Simply Cyber community resources. We have the Discord server that's lively and always keeps the conversation going. You can connect with me directly on LinkedIn. And also every single weekday morning on the Simply Cyber channel, we're doing live daily cyber threat briefings, 8 a.m. Eastern time, as well as Thursday at 4:30 p.m. We're doing live stream interviews with industry experts, and we produce videos that we push out every Wednesday morning. I'm Jerry from Simply Cyber. I hope you enjoyed the content, and we'll see you in the next one.